Welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things, filmed live in front of a studio audience at Cock and Bottle. Filmed, yeah, you heard what I said. Filmed live in front of a studio audience at the Cock and Bottle, being stared at like weirdos by loads of people upsetting small children, still drinking Liberation Blonde, still having probably the best afternoon of the spring. It's a hard life.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So what are we talking about this month?
This month, we are talking about data bases.
The bases where data reside.
Yes, all your bases of data belong to me.
Nice.
Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're talking about databases. Mostly because we had very few things that begin with D.
Sure. It's like digital and then something, but otherwise...
It was digital everything.
You didn't want digital watches, digital calculators.
No, because they're not interesting.
Digital love.
Digital watches aren't interesting.
I don't know.
Mm.
Well, like the ones that are calculators are pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, we're rambling again. We've already had to try this three times. Let's start again. So we're doing databases.
We are.
My exposure to databases, are the many databases that I am on. I mean nothing. I mean, I use...
I think they're called watch lists.
I use Access, Microsoft Access, and Microsoft Excel.
Yay.
And I use
Excel, not a database.
But it's a list of things, which is technically a base for data. Anyway.
Nope.
I use Access. I use the templates. I build lots of things of bits of information which need to be presented in different ways. I know how to build buttons, and you click on the different buttons, and it presents them in different ways.
So, Mike, what's a database?
It's a base for data.
It's technically accurate.
Nailed it!
Can't argue with that. I suppose we need to think about databases in terms of as many things that we talk about. Early days of computing and pre-computing. So, data. What is data?
Information.
Information.
Also, a sentient android in Star Trek Next Gen.
Yes. No. Data is something that we produce inherently as a society, along with waste and children. It's pretty much our next biggest export.
Waste, children, and data. I think it was Oscar Wilde that said, you know, one thing you can be sure of, death, taxes, data, waste and children. Yeah. I think that's the old famous...
That's the full quote, right? Yeah. He always gets truncated. Yeah. And if we think about data, we need someone to put it.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I know where you can put it.
That's what she said.
Why do we record data as a species? Nobody knows exactly why. In fact, we have
to remember stuff.
Good,
right?
Ideas to remember stuff, and we've been doing this since time immemorial.
Sure.
We have been drawing on cave walls. We've been somehow working out that if you flatten that plant and dry it, you can write on it.
Right. Or smoke it. Don't discount that.
Yeah. And what
wipe
we
your
end
butt
up
with
it. Is
sorry, this isn't the point of this podcast.
A situation where we acknowledge the point of kind of the ledger, I suppose, is the precursor.
Yeah,
of the
sure, okay, like a shopping list.
Now, the
else?
Idea that you write stuff down, why, yeah. So you don't forget it.
Yeah.
But also, so that you can then look back and review what you've written down and analyse.
Well, I will say this to you, and I'm getting out of my bag, but it's actually in my pocket. It's not, it's in my bag, but anyway, I constantly carry around a tiny notepad in my back pocket at all times, to write shit down on that I'm going to forget, whether it's you need to buy milk and beer. Weird how beer turns up so many times on those lists. Things like my PIN number or my mother's maiden name. No, I'm kidding. But like information that I need to remember that isn't necessarily, doesn't need to be secure, but I write it down in my notepad all the time.
Yeah,
so I guess I'm carrying around a database with me all the time.
Yeah, except querying it is quite hard. You have to remember where you left stuff and what have you. So
I generally have to look through every single page because there's no index in my notepad. Yeah,
I mean, so fundamentally, yeah. When we talk about databases in terms of technology, we're talking about four main properties, give or take. The first is storage.
Right.
We need to make sure the data is saved.
Sure.
If it's not saved, then what's the fucking point?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So storing data and large quantities of data, potentially in different shapes and sizes, and data is variable, right? You know, you could have a name, you could have a date of birth, you could have the entire works of Charles Dickens.
Or a database of pictures or something. Or, like,
or
yeah,
pictures
yeah.
Or video.
A database of dick pics.
Really?
I had to get dick pics in.
Just
Tim, I'm still waiting to hear from you. Timbo. See, Timbo. Come on, bro.
You know the email address. Come on, send them in.
I call Tim Berners-Lee, bro. That's how we are. Yeah. That's how we live. I bet you any money there is a database of dick pics out there somewhere.
I guarantee.
I bet the FBI.
A huge database.
I bet there's like the sex offenders list is at least half dick pics. This is taking
this
a dark
entire
turn.
Getting cut. We're not going okay. 5 minutes in.
So
sex offenders list.
So databases, information of any variety,
which we need to store.
Sure.
The second main thing that databases let us do, and this is actually really important, is querying or retrieving that data.
Sure.
Because anybody can store data, you can write it down, you can put it in a big box, you can leave it in the hands of top men.
Yeah. Nice.
Unless you can query it and retrieve it and manipulate it, the data is not necessarily very useful.
Now, that brings me to a quick question based on your reference, as in top men. If the Ark of the Covenant begins with A, why is it put so far into the middle of that warehouse? Because surely they just use an alphabetized system.
No, it's numerical.
And it'll be an A, right?
It has an asset reference.
So if it's a numerical, why is it in the middle then? It would be the end, wouldn't it? It would be
the
latest find.
Government?
Please. It's like the Dewey Decimal System or some ridiculous thing.
Yeah, it's nonsense. I mean, they're still trying to run on imperial. Pounds and ounces and chains.
Is the mic picking me
yards
up? Is that picking
it
up?
Yeah, we got
cool.
that.
Help. Let's just get one clean. Okay, go on.
Querying, very important.
Sure.
Another thing that databases tend to do these days is they allow themselves to be centralized. So you have one database with many different connections.
Yeah. So
lots of people putting
for,
stuff in, lots of people getting stuff out, and it's all good.
Yeah. Like my online dick pic registry.
Yeah. It's very, very busy on the way in.
A lot of traffic.
Not so
lot
much
of
on the
traffic.
Way out. Literally, it's
yeah,
the FBI.
It really is. It's basically just a bag
Don't
of dicks
one.
At this point. It's just a big old bag of dicks. A digital bag of dicks. That's what we should have done for D. A digital bag of dicks. Anyway, go on.
Well, we kind of are. Databases
yeah.
could be
okay,
a
yeah,
digital
sure,
bag of dicks.
Sure.
The next property is actually four sub-properties, and these kind of came into being when we started talking about
you
computerizing data. So let's take a brief moment and think about computers and information and how they store information.
Just quietly to ourselves? Or?
Yeah.
Right.
Got it?
Yeah.
Good. We have to digitize the data. So we're dealing with binary code, which
right.
is fine because computers can do that
Ones
for most
and zeros.
Everything. Yeah.
Like in a matrix.
But also computers are limited by the fact that they are dealing with binary data. So we have a couple of properties that we apply for. And you'll like this. The acronym for these four is ACID.
ACID.
A-C-I-D.
A-C-I-D. Right.
And
like
these
acid
are
jazz.
Modern database systems tend right. to apply these four properties.
Let me guess what the ACID stands for.
Go on then. Let's start with A. What do you reckon?
Right. I think it stands for a crazy indigo nope. dinosaur.
Nope, no.
Okay, let's start again. Alphabetical cock industry database.
No.
Okay.
Last chance.
Alpha Centauri is distant.
That's acid again.
I feel like I finished on the worst one. So what does it stand for? What does it stand for?
Atomicity.
I'm sorry?
Atomicity.
Atomicity, of course.
Yeah.
What a fool I was.
The idea that basically when you change data in a database, it happens all at once or not at all. The idea
sure.
that if you put something new into your filing system, it right. has to be filed
yeah.
or it has to be removed. You can't have partial data.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah? Sure.
So that's A. C, consistency.
Right.
Basically, the idea that after you finish doing anything with a database, whether yeah. it's putting data in or getting data out, it is left in a completely consistent state.
So, as in, if you want to file, I don't know, data of people, it has to be consistently name, address, date of birth, whatever. It has to be
no.
consistent medium? Or
more like if after you've put a file in the filing cabinet, you have to make sure you've shut the door and
right.
the file is very much in there. It's consistent. The next person who gets there will see
right.
the filing cabinet. They
okay.
can open the drawer, find the date they want, take it out, and right. close the drawer.
So
it's
consistency
consistent.
Of use as
yeah.
opposed to consistency
We're
of media.
We're talking about digital
okay.
data.
Right, okay.
I. Isolation, and this is quite important again, the idea that if you make a change to a specific bit of data, it shouldn't have knock-ons to other bits.
Right, unless you right. wanted to, presumably.
Yeah.
So, like, if a postcode changes and they add an extra number, we want to add that extra number to all these different files.
The big example is that if two things happen in a, or many things happen in a database simultaneously, it should be exactly the same at the end as if they'd happened sequentially.
Right.
So if you put in five new files at the same time,
right,
it should be the same as if you put in file one, file two. D is the concept of durability.
Yeah.
And the idea that once data has been committed, it sticks around. So you write data to a database, and even if the power goes out or you know, the server shuts down or what have you,
right,
data is still there when you next come back.
So, like, there's a power cut on your house. Your computer is switched off, but actually when you turn it back on, all your information is still on it.
Boom.
Boom.
Durability.
Boom. Also, how does it do that?
It's
is there a
clever
battery in my computer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, asked and answered.
Also, it just writes it all out to disk when it's shutting down and then reads it all off disk.
Also,
when it's
we're
going
to need to do H for hard disk because I don't really understand how hard disks work.
Oh, fuck my life.
No, seriously, what did he? There's like a dude in there running it all down?
Mm-hmm.
It might as well be that because I'm honestly don't know. But anyway, go on. So we've done ACID. So that's the seven.
Yeah. So
that's the 7-4 principles of a database.
The 7x4 principles.
Yeah.
Perfect. So
now we've done the 7-4 principles.
Now we need to think about, well, what we always think about, which is the history of the database.
So we're talking about,
we need to go back in time.
So we're talking about the Library of Alexandria.
No, a bit forward in time.
The Library of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Really, they had a library?
I don't know.
In a garden, that seems
impractical.
I feel
like they might have done. A lot of water.
Hanging Library of Babylon.
Hanging Library of Babylon. Hanging Library, name of my band.
We're looking at the 1960s,
right?
And specifically, a company that everybody knows and hates, IBM.
Right. Made computers for the Nazis.
I mean, technically, actually, IBM didn't really enter this story until the 70s, so let's go back a little bit further.
Ooh, 1958.
The year is 1958.
A man sits alone with a ledger. He thinks, this would be better if it was automated, and then he makes an automated version.
Thus,
the electronic database was born.
Probably not far off, actually. There was a prerequisite, and one of them was storage.
Right.
Computers traditionally had shit storage.
Amazing.
They were using, like, punch cards.
Well, we were talking about this earlier because you had your handheld little, what's it?
My Scion 5.
Your Scion 5. And it had how much memory?
16 megabytes.
That blows my mind. That's the best.
But that is incredibly up-to-date and powerful.
And when did you get that?
About a year and a half ago.
1990?
No, that was 2000.
So when did it come out, sorry?
About 1998.
Shut up. That is mental. Anyway, so back in there.
So back in the day, we had shit storage on computers. They were using punch cards. They were using tape with little holes in it.
Right.
And it's like, this is great for kind of reading stuff in, but try storing anything worthy of note. You're just punching holes in cards. You've got to keep there. Yeah.
Everything was written down in notes and put on.
So databases weren't really a thing until about the 60s, mostly because everybody knew they wanted them, but we didn't have any means of storing them.
Sure.
Until the invention of, three things: tape, disk, and drum storage.
Right, okay. But drum storage is just tape in a drum, right?
It's just a disk in a drum, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
All of a sudden, we have
We should have done D for disks, because I don't know how disks work, but keep going, please.
Yeah, but then we would have made many, many floppy jokes.
A magnet makes things go up and down or something, right?
Yeah, not anymore.
I don't know.
No, it's all solid state, baby.
Solid state, baby! Also, best pickup line ever. I don't know how much you know about tech, but I'm solid state, baby. And then boom! Arrested.
Don't talk to this guy, he's floppy.
Classic. Me and you just high-fiving. Sorry, go on.
The advent of decent, manageable, workable storage meant that all of a sudden we could start writing software for these amazing computers.
Right.
They were amazing at the time.
Sure.
Less so now.
They were the size of a room.
Yeah.
And a big room.
And this software was designed to do all of the things we talked about. Store data,
right,
query it, and what have you.
Like in Strangelove, when they've got that room full of computers and he's looking at that ridiculous printout.
Yeah.
All those movies
all
in the 60s and 70s. All
and
those reels,
you,
like in
story.
Star Trek and stuff, all the tapes moving, the reel-to-reel things.
And effectively in the 60s, what we had was very little going on apart from a system that was designed called Codasil.
Codasil.
It does sound like a mouthwash.
It does sound a little bit, yeah.
Codasil. And this was actually invented by the same guys who invented COBOL.
Who invented what?
COBOL. It's like one of the ancient languages.
Right,
the languages of my ancestors are COBOL and Fortran.
Ancient, you mean, is in like 60s programming language?
Yeah, I'm in IT.
You don't mean like
ancient
Sanskrit.
Is a week ago.
Right, okay, right, sure.
It may have been based on Sanskrit. It wasn't. And what they basically came up with was a system where they could store data, but it was unwieldy, and nobody actually knew how to use it unless you were kind of...
Use a van to drive it around, yeah.
It wasn't just that. It was just using it. Like, getting data out of it was hard. Yeah. Getting data into it was hard. Doing anything meaningful...
It was
easier
to write everything down and just look it up in a book.
Totally.
Sure.
The duodecimal system was beating databases at this point.
Nice, yeah.
So flash forward to the crazy 70s.
The wild and crazy 70s.
When literally nothing good happened.
Right. They just kept doing the same stuff from the 60s.
Yeah, but...
Oh, we can't do anything. We're too busy smoking dope and listening to all the Beatles.
But now dope was illegal and the Summer of Love had passed and...
Like Richard Feynman was like driving around in his van.
That was actually quite a good thing.
That was quite good, yeah.
In the 70s, and we're going to talk briefly about a guy called Edgar Codd.
Edgar Codd on the job.
With a double D.
He would settle for nothing less.
And Edgar Codd was working for IBM.
And Edgar Codd was a bit of a coxman, actually. He was a bit of a coxman. He played the field.
Is this based on your...
This is something I know about Edgar Codd. People don't know about this, that... He's known as the inventor of the modern database, but he's also just as well known as the most prolific lover since Peter Stringfellow.
So he's working for IBM's research lab in the
70s,
and
he's
a dud muffin.
He is just getting... He's up to his knees in pussy.
I'm going to call bullshit.
Well, you haven't read the books I've read.
Edgar, feel free to correct me.
Codd, get on the line.
And what Edgar's big contribution was...
I did not. Codd, get on the line. I swear to God, I did not mean to say that. Oh, that is good.
So, Eddie Baby's big contribution.
The big Codd, the big double D.
The big double D's contribution was he realised that actually rather than trying to store data in just random piles or in books or what have you, how about if we put them into...
Random piles.
Tables.
Oh.
Of... fixed-length records. Each table contains a different type
this
of information.
This feels like a very logical step.
Well,
that no
it does,
one, like, does it feel
does
logical
now.
Because it does now, because that's how it works. But at the time, no one just thought, I know, I should put it in a set list of alphabetical order.
I think,
and people are like, you're a genius, Eddie Codd.
The key thing to remember
you're a big
here
fish.
Is somebody...
in the database pond. Yeah, that's not stopping until we move on from Eddie Codd.
Is that somebody had to invent wine. Before wine, there was no wine. Somebody had to come up with it. Now we're just like,
but
yeah, of course.
Wine doesn't seem obvious. Putting stuff in an alphabetical order seems pretty straightforward, as opposed to, as you put it, random piles.
Yes, but at the same time, we've been putting stuff in order for ages. We were just doing it in a computer.
Sure, okay. I get that there is more to it than that. It's fair enough.
So Edgar, bless him, is about to leave our story, the hero, having invented the concept of putting stuff in kind of tables which... Might look a bit familiar if you've ever used something like Excel.
Sure.
You know, each sheet being a table. Yeah. And also, the concept, very importantly, that we break those tables up so that each table can represent a specific type of data.
Right, okay.
Cool. Let's move on a little bit further. We're now coming up to the late 70s when, frankly, the 80s are about to start, so everyone's really depressed and trying to work out exactly which side they should grow their hair out.
Yeah.
And IBM have taken Dodd's work... And they have built something called System R.
System R.
R.
Is that because the president has been killed?
No. It's because they were crewed by pirates.
It's a reference to our other podcast. Okay. Do you know why...
Otherwise, that would be System R.
Do you know why pirates are called pirates?
No. Why are pirates
because
called
pirates?
Because they are. IBM are working on System R.
R.
And they released System R in 78, 79. System R is the first big relational database.
Right. That's what Alpha stands for.
Trouble is, they were beaten to the punch by a company called Oracle.
So they weren't the first company, then?
No.
Literally just lied to me, and as a follow-up punch, they were beaten by Oracle.
They were beaten by Oracle. You
Which
heard
is
of
weird,
Oracle.
Because Oracle have seen the future. They've seen them create... Anyway, go on.
No. That's probably why he named it, but Larry Ellenson is basically a bit of a douche.
Larry Ernst?
Ellenson. And Oracle managed to release their first database system to market in 1978. These were all relational databases, so these are all using Dodd's tables.
And what were they used for?
Storing data.
Yeah, but like, were they marketed to a particular...
Businesses.
Industry, so like customer data
Big
we're talking about.
Business.
Names,
the first
bank account
customer
numbers,
of IBM System R was Pratt & Whitney.
Right, okay.
So they make aircraft engines, I think.
Sure.
Or possibly
so
whole aircraft.
So it's a database
aircraft.
Of parts and aircrafts and where they are.
Yeah, they need data. Sure. They have lots of data. Yeah, they make aircraft.
We've got all these fucking books. We need to sort it out with just one big-ass list that we can reference.
So we're talking about big business at this point, and anyone who can afford a mainframe.
Sure.
Let's move on. Through the 70s, the relational database, the table, has become pretty much a household business name. And if you don't have one, you want one.
Sure.
And if you don't have an Oracle
everybody
database...
Everybody remembers that big thing in the 80s of, like, there was, like, Coke, and there was, like, the Honda and the Mini. That was the 70s. And there was, like,
the
have
relational
a database.
Database.
Have a relational database.
Do you even database, dude?
Exactly. Sorry, go on. You were saying, so in the late... in the 80s, computing is now... Everyone's got one.
It's commodity. Everybody's got a desktop computer, and all of a sudden this idea that you have to have a central server, a big mainframe that runs your database, is like, well, why would I?
Yeah.
I've got computers everywhere.
They've
don't want a big
tens
central
of
thing.
Megabytes
I want everybody to have their own database, which is a very bad idea for reasons that will become clear momentarily, if not already. And one of the big players here is a company called DBase.
DBase.
DBase. In D house.
Amazing. They actually wanted to make a lot of garage.
Now,
they became DJs and they made a lot of garage, and then they faded into obscurity, but weirdly arrested for carrying cocaine across the Moroccan border. But to begin with, DBase made
database software that would install on a personal computer.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you no longer had to be reliant upon your big corporate structure to support a database.
So this is before
you could have your
like
own database,
Excel and Access, and all this kind of stuff.
This
is you could have your own list of people.
Yes. We're talking Lotus 1-2-3 was the spreadsheet of choice.
Sure.
We're still in DOS land at this point. Windows is kind of vaguely a thing.
Right.
But still, pretty much we're all
when
about DOS.
When did Windows become a thing?
I don't know. 90s. Late 80s?
Windows 95?
When was Windows 1? Windows 1, I think, was about 88. Now, the introduction of a personal database system was amazing and also the beginning of one of the biggest problems that computing has faced ever since.
Right.
Everybody could build a database, so it was all of a sudden open.
Sure.
And I remember my dad using DBase to build databases for work. He could track information and he could query it.
So, like, billing information, invoices, all sorts of shit.
Well,
yeah,
all sorts of shit.
Whatever you want,
It was brilliant. It also introduced the concept that we'll come back to of personal computer menace.
Right.
And this is where
PCM.
Excel is... Oh, Excel. Damn you!
I like Excel. It's easy to use.
We're going to keep going.
I can use
through the 90s. And through the 90s, we kind of have this weird parity where computing power is improving and the server database is still a thing.
Right.
But at the same time, so are the various installable databases. And Microsoft have done something called Access.
Yeah.
It used to be called Jet.
Really?
Who was my favourite gladiator.
I wonder why they changed it. Jet was your favourite gladiator?
Yeah.
You didn't like Wolf or Rhino?
No.
Oh, no, I get it, because you wanted to fuck Jet.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm on you. Now I'm getting you. Oh, then I guess you was my favourite too. Definitely not Rhino. Let's move on.
And we end up with this decade of basic progress, where we're getting, things are getting faster and better and happier and more productive.
Yeah. But we have the technology. They
nothing's really
stronger.
Changed. We're still working with tables.
Yep.
Tables of data that were invented by Dodd with a double D back in the 70s, and it's all cool. Get to the noughties. As much as I hate that phrase, it's kind of convenient when you've been talking about the 80s, the 90s, and the noughties. You can't say the 2000s. It sounds retarded.
Better than the noughties. Oh, they're naughty. No, they're not.
And
although that was my naughtiest decade.
We're starting to grow our data requirements a little bit.
Right.
Mostly because, as we'll discuss in a moment, there are some types of data that don't fit very well into tables, and now we have new database engines being designed, new ways of storing data, and these are, I suppose, colloquially referred to as NoSQL.
No.
SQL.
No SQR.
Yeah, because back in the 70s...
And SQR stands for...
Hang on, I'll get there.
Okay.
Back in the 70s, not only did Dodd invent this concept of tables, but he also, or his colleagues rather, at IBM, invented a language to query structured data.
So that's why I use the templates and all that shit on Access, and SQR is like, if you want to up your Access game, bro, you need to use SQR.
You've got to do SQL.
SQL. SQL. Okay, my bad.
Standard query language.
So where does Visual Basic come into it then?
It doesn't, if you have any sense.
Okay, cool. SQL it is.
Don't use Visual Basic for databases, children. It's a bad move.
So weird that kids are listening to this podcast.
Well, why wouldn't they?
Fucking,
we're future-looking, and we swear a lot.
Talking about big old dicks.
I'm pretty sure we are a meme.
I'm pretty sure we are a meme. We're
one
definitely a cliche.
Big,
I don't know
meme.
About a meme, but yeah. Yeah. So SQL.
Yeah. So SQL is the language...
Super quixotic lizards.
It's the language pro bono. No, that's not it.
Okay.
What's the word that you use when you describe a de facto?
Quid pro quo? No.
When
you describe de facto, do you mean de facto?
So SQL is the native tongue, mother language of database querying, and it lets us do all sorts of stuff. And until we get to the noughties, it's pretty much all we've been using.
Sure.
Or some weird DBASE-y thing. It's kind of cool. So... in the noughties, we suddenly have new data, we've got bigger data, different shapes of data, we've got more of it.
Yep.
And we need different ways to store it, so we now end up with the NoSQLs
right.
that don't use this kind of tabular system
for
storing data.
So they don't use the grid thing that you're used to in Excel?
No, they don't use it. They use other ways, other means.
Magic ways.
And we have NewSQL. NewSQL is basically designed to overcome a whole bunch of limitations of the grid thing.
Right.
And the idea that you have one computer running it.
Sure. I won't lie to you, that is a lot of information, but I'm up to speed.
Good. I'm happy for you.
I won't retain any of that, but it was a nice bit
of
background
colour. Because we're recording it.
It's a nice bit of background
colour. For posterity.
Colour. Oh, that'll be good. Nowadays.
Nowadays.
I know what I use. Nowadays. I know what I use databases for, because I use them in my work. But I guess they're used everywhere, right? So it's like IMDb drawing from a database.
Well, given that the DB literally stands for database.
For database. Oh my god.
What do you think, kids?
That is, that is the dumbest thing I've ever said, and that is a big list to draw from.
So, yes, IMDb uses a database.
So, does Amazon use a database?
Yeah, probably several.
It's got to use a list of movies, right? And we've got it in stock and whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Is Amazon the DVD rental
store? So everything,
all
the shopping in the whole world that you do ever online?
Pretty much anything online that saves data is using a database.
Yeah. Anything that has a draw from something, yeah.
And let's think a little bit
bigger. But Google doesn't, because Google doesn't have a database of the entire fucking internet.
Yes, they do.
Shut up. Are you serious?
100%.
No, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
How can they... But it's changing all the time, so how can
they continually update it? Atomically, no less. Acid.
What? Uh-huh. What, seriously?
Yeah.
Well, so when you Google, it doesn't go and look at... Do Google on Google, it doesn't go and look
how
at the whole
internet.
How do
you think Google works? They've got to be checking some kind of index card.
So they've got a list on a database somewhere, and they search the list, and it brings you back the result.
Yeah. And Google, to
be honest,
I know
that sounds really obvious, but...
one of the best database engines in the world, because they have to index.
How big is their fucking server farm, then, that they've got every single thing on the entirety of the internet, apart from the darknet, saved on it? So it's just everything and anything that you... if you look up something or look for something on the internet, which is the entirety of the internet, pretty much...
Yeah.
Wow.
Quite.
So when I tweet, does that go onto a database somewhere?
Yes. It goes onto several.
I don't care for that. Do they use cookies to do it?
Probably, but not directly. Twitter will have a database of tweets. We'll talk a bit more about Twitter in a moment. Google will have a database of the entire internet,
right?
By definition. And this is where I said think
so
a bit bigger. I like the fact that you went from...
Is that owned by Google?
Yeah.
Or is there a central... is it Cisco? Is there a Cisco thing where the internet
Google
lives?
Google own it. Google own the Google data.
That's weird. And Google's data is every single thing that's ever been written on the internet ever.
That they've managed to discover and store.
Jesus Christ.
That's the epitome of...
this should just be called the Let's Scare the Shit Out of Mike podcast.
That's
every week, I'm like, every month, I'm like, what?
I cut this out last time because you were sounding paranoid.
Go on.
Snap out of it, man.
Go on. Sorry.
No, that is the epitome of big data. But there's systems that sit in between. So, say, for example, classic biblical story, tale as old as time.
Event Horizon.
No, the classic biblical nativity story.
Sure.
Where Mary and Joseph
when Jesus
go
is born.
To... why do they go to Nazareth?
Because there was no room at the inn.
No, that's why they stepped in a stable. Why did they go? Why were they out on the road?
Legit, don't know.
Seriously?
Don't know.
What school did you go to?
Couldn't give less of a shit. Why did they go? I don't know.
Right, they went to
their parents kicked them out because
they went to be counted. They went for a census.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, and this is still something that we do nowadays.
Which is weird.
We count people.
Don't care for that either.
Well, it's kind of weird, but at the same time, you kind of need to know. How many people do we have? Otherwise, how are you going to do things like scaling your healthcare system?
All right, I'll let them off.
Yeah. And that used to be a bunch of people got together and counted, and they were putting like check marks on vellum.
So you used to have to get everybody to come to Jerusalem to write their names down.
Pretty much. It was actually Nazareth, his hometown.
People in the Bible were dumb as shit.
Yeah, a little bit, but they didn't have databases.
Well,
or movies.
Well, he couldn't have been that great then, could he? Come back to life, couldn't invent an iPhone, so...
I keep trying to bring this away from the whole bit where we've just offended every Christian person online, which is most of them.
just the American ones. So they turned up, they had the census, they had to write everything down.
Yeah, in the good old days,
yeah.
What do you do with that information? It's on a scroll somewhere, you have to count them, summarise it, and work it all out.
And that's
these
why
days,
you scroll through information on Excel.
No, that's just because the scrolling movement is like a scroll.
No, I know, anyway, go on, yeah, so instead of having to turn up to someone's gaff now...
This podcast
you are smoking the cigarette like an angry Frenchman all of a sudden. So rather than having to turn up to the States of Jersey, which we're sat next to in the beautiful sunshine, rather than to turn up there and say, hello, there are five of us living in my house at St. Wines.
In theory, what should now happen is that you can just submit your information, it goes straight into a database.
Everybody writes GNI on it.
All the people who care about your religion can find out immediately what your religion is by querying that data.
Yeah.
All the people who want to know how many men and women there are can do so. All the people who want to know how many people there are between the ages of 25 and 26
like a big-ass
who identify
Excel spreadsheet
as a smoking Jedi.
Yeah.
We also have other systems. I mean, we talked about Pratt Whitney earlier, the first user of the first commercial database.
Right.
Boeing, Airbus.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Produce huge amounts of data.
Well, passenger data?
Passenger data, flight model data.
Oh, sure. So it's got to be how every single aircraft
fuel efficiency,
with a flight
and
in this kind of condition.
Maybe you're starting to grasp just how important this stuff is, because they make...
So the databases have got to be complicated enough that they can not only record the actual data, but then also capture the context that data was recorded in.
It might be many databases.
Yeah.
But everything that they do is informed by data that's held in a database.
Right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Boeing, giant databases.
All these businesses are running, and every employer, so anybody who has a job, assuming they don't work for themselves.
And everybody complains about how everything is recorded in the whole world, the number of calls you make, the number of people you speak to, the number of calls you make, but the number of people you get through to. Like, every single thing you do is always recorded.
Yeah, why?
Because it's fucking useful.
Yes.
It's a bore ache.
Wisdom is the fount of all knowledge.
Having shitloads of information makes you more cleverer.
Yeah, that.
I believe. I think it was Jesus that said
all
that.
All of it wasn't Jesus. Seriously. Can we just at least cut to
sorry,
a different...
Sorry, no, sorry. Jesus.
Jesus.
My Hispanic friend.
Yeah, your Hispanic
it's
mate.
My bad.
Thank you. And the reason that we have all of these data is because we have databases.
Sure.
Somewhere to store it, somewhere for it to live.
So you're saying we have data because we have databases rather than the other way around?
I mean, there's a general approach these days in business that you record all the things.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? You may gain 100% efficiency from...
90% of the data you record is bullshit and you'd never use it, but 10% you get is actually really useful.
Sorry,
but you don't know what that 10%
is going to
be.
We now know how many pieces of toilet paper our employees use per visit on average.
Yeah. But that kind of thing, you never know when it'll end up being used.
It's probably never going to end up being
useful. This is controversial.
But
controversial, but I am pro-database.
Yeah, good.
Except
finally.
like recording stuff that I don't want people to know about. If we've got all this data, if we've got every single thing recorded about every minute of our lives and how much toilet paper we use and whatever else, presumably that is classed as big data.
Big, huge, the biggest.
The biggest. Are there levels? Is there medium data?
I think that big data is a phrase that's come into being fairly recently, and it's powered by this idea of the new databases.
Right. So big data is just broad data.
It's broad,
it's all-encompassing, omnipotent data.
Broad, deep, and unwieldy.
Sure. So it's not data that's like, we need to record how many people have had parking tickets this month. We need to record every single aspect of every single thing that everybody have done. That is big data.
Yeah.
Right.
So if we're recording everywhere that you visit on the internet and everywhere that everybody else visits on the internet, that kind of thing, it's broad.
Okay.
But it goes bigger and deeper than that.
Right, okay.
what we end up with is a situation where we had to rework the database.
Right.
Because you can't fit...
Because the data is so big.
Yeah.
It requires its own special type of big database.
How would you record, for example, your activity during a day in a tabular database?
Well, you'd have to strike it down to, I don't know, 5 or 10 different individual things that you do. I don't know.
You'd record it in a spreadsheet. And then so you have columns and maybe a timestamp.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You'd have the most common things. You couldn't have a column for every single thing you do because there'd be too many columns or too many rows.
This is where the tabular data system falls apart.
Sure.
And this is where big data spurred on in the noughties.
Right.
This concept of NoSQL. What? It's naughty. I like it.
To say 2000s.
We're coming from a world where the relational database is king. This idea that we can represent any data in tables, and tables are all we need, and all of a sudden, we start getting into big data.
Right.
Big data breaks that assertion that we can just record everything in nice, orderly grids.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
All of a sudden...
life doesn't fit into boxes, man.
People don't
fit into boxes.
No.
It's true.
And big data...
I mean, they do if you chop them up, but... Yeah.
And post them?
No, I'm not posting. I'm burying them, mostly.
Mike, what's in the
throwing
box?
Throwing them into swamps.
What's in the box, Mike? What's in the box?
Hopefully Gwyneth Paltrow's head. If it stops her getting people to shoot steam up their vaginas, then definitely Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
Is that what she's doing now?
Yes, it is. It's
nice.
Let's move on. Where were we?
Well, we're still trying to get through big data.
Big data. Well, it's a big subject.
Tables don't work. And
people
we start to think about different ways of structuring data.
Sure, yeah.
When we talk
about... The nuance of data.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
And
are we talking about quantum data right now?
No.
Sure enough.
I'm going to love it when we get to Q.
I heard it in a film. Go on.
Was it a Bond movie?
I think it was Star Trek, actually. But anyway, go on. Right, so big data. Too big. People don't fit
too
in boxes.
Too big doesn't fit in boxes. Sure. So what we need to do is start thinking about different ways of structuring data, and we then come up with the NoSQL databases.
Right.
And these are cool things, like we can structure data in a star or a graph.
Right.
So say, for example, that if you had... And let's talk about data. Let's get deep into the data for a moment.
Let's get deep into the D. The biggest of the Ds.
Ooh, really?
Let's get deep in that D.
We can model very easily in terms of a table... How you would describe people.
Right.
Now let's think about modelling how they are friends with each other.
Right. Now you're talking about a Venn diagram.
So we could have... but it's a diagram, not a database.
Still, yeah, sure.
Fucking useless. Apart from visualisation, it's terrible. So we have our people in rows, and that's fine, and they're all good. We can describe Mike as being, 6'4", black, slightly balding. We can describe Rob as being a 27-year-old... Samoan midget.
I don't even know how to I don't even know how to respond to that.
Now start tracking their relationships.
Right.
So Mike is friends with Rob, and Rob is not friends with Mike anymore.
I'm friends with you because I met you through
Robbie.
Yeah,
and then we're both friends with Coco.
And I knew Robbie through John. And I knew John through a guy that I knew in Watford.
Yeah, and it all starts to get a bit messy because all of a sudden you have to have this table that has all these relationships
And
why not just do it as a graph?
I've just realised what you're talking about, and it's from an episode of Numbers. You talk about set theory.
Yes.
Yes!
The entire basis of databases is set theory.
I've nailed it based on an NBC procedural cop show. David Krumholtz taught me about set theory. You said about this the other day, and I was like, I'm sure I knew about set theory. And I watched it, and I saw it on an episode of Numbers. Yes! Just remember, kids... Quit school. It's not going to teach you shit.
Just watch
that TV can't teach you. Sorry, I've also massively stolen your thunder. You're clearly annoyed. I'm so sorry.
Databases are pure set theory. They're the personification of set theory in code. That's exactly how they work. But what we have within set theory is certain things that actually are very hard to model if you're dealing with tabular data. So we have things like the graph database, where you have a series of nodes and relationships.
Sure.
And this is kind of cool. This was... Somebody's going to correct me. I'm pretty sure this was actually invented by LinkedIn.
LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Like the LinkedIn, the website of beeper wearing men?
Yes. Because they need to know who you work for, who you work with, and all of this. They're a connection system. You can model it in tabular, but it's going to be really fucking hard to query.
Sure,
it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Imagine trying to filter that.
The other thing that we then end up with is we have column and key value. Now, this is kind of cool. The idea that actually you don't give a crap about the structure of the data. You don't need to know what type of data is in this field. But at the same time, you just need to know that data X is Y. And this was pretty much pioneered by the big social networks.
Yeah, of course.
I think it's time, Mike. It's time for Rob's interesting fact.
Yes! Way more excited about that than I should be.
So, Mike, my interesting fact is actually a question.
Oh.
Do you know
how
much data would be required to record everything that a human being sees and hears over their entire lifetime in 1080 HD?
I'm going to say, because I think you want me to say like a bajillion, gajillion terabytes, I'm going to say half a Blu-ray.
Really? A Blu-ray is HD, and a Blu-ray is 2 hours long.
Okay, 10 Blu-rays. I don't know.
That's 20 hours. That's a day.
I think if we've established anything, it's that I don't know the answers to questions like this.
No. But it's still fun asking.
So if you were to record the entirety of experience through the eye sockets...
Yep, including when you were asleep.
Fuck knows. I mean...
1.05 exabytes of data.
So what's that in comparison to a gigabyte?
Right, a gigabyte is...
1,000 megabytes. Right,
in fact, let's go the other way. An exabyte is 1,000 nearest damn it. Petabytes. A petabyte is 1,000 terabytes. A terabyte is 1,000 gigabytes.
It's like 1,000 million. So it's like 1,000 million.
Yeah. And that's just
it's like
audio
a million,
video.
Billion.
That's not
bytes.
All the other senses. That's not dreams and thoughts that go through your head.
Just what comes through your eye holes.
Yeah. What you physically experience. 1.05 exabytes of data.
How have they measured that?
You can calculate it's time. Time of video. If you're rolling VT...
average amount of life, average amount of eyes... average amount of life, basically.
Average amount of eyes, yeah. You get half if you have an iPad.
I mean, average amount of eyes open, I was going to say, but average amount of life, then, per hour, how long it would take them to record that at 1080p...
So let's get on some real numbers. And now we're going to switch to 3D. What?
Ones have wanted it in 3D to get the real experience. To really feel like I've sat here all afternoon in the pub with you.
Honestly, to get the full context, times it by 10.
Plus the emotional context.
That can't be recorded.
Times it by beer. Times it by heart.
Times it by love.
Just taking a weird turn. Right, so moving on. So a million bajillion gajillion.
Take a minute.
Petabytes.
Just let that sink in. That's the entirety of human experience over the course of a single person's lifetime.
Right.
How many people are there on the planet?
6 billion?
I know. Lots. Many.
I thought you were rhetorically asking. I'm struggling to tell the difference at this point. Right, so but you can't database experience.
Why not?
That's called artificial intelligence. That's like...
No.
That's
it's
how you
just
create
recording.
Now you're talking about Blade Runner. Now you're talking about giving Rachel the memories of Tyrell's niece, giving her that experience.
And
now you're talking about...
If we take databases,
so the memory capacity
conclusion.
Of a replicant in Blade Runner is bananas.
Yes, insane. Also fictional. Let's look at something more pragmatic in terms of attainable.
So what you're saying is, regardless of how much data we collect, we're never actually going to replicate. As much as social media might be able to predict what pages we might want to look at, they can't actually base it entirely on your personality because, frankly, mostly it would take up too much bloody space to save your personality down.
And yet, unbelievably or believably enough, there are companies working on how they can record it. Hence, the metric exists. Let's take Facebook. You're on Facebook.
Yep.
How much data do you think Facebook generates in a day?
Well, what? There's billions of users now, right?
Yep.
So how many billions? 4 billion? 3 billion? That's
accounts.
That doesn't mean that half the population of the world has got it. It just, okay. So, I don't know. Jesus. If we're talking, what we were talking before, not petabytes.
Exabytes.
Let's say 100 exabytes.
Really?
I've plucked it out of the air from nothing.
Per day?
I'm still not
you can, record 70 years of someone's life in 1.05 exabytes.
All right, so we know. Okay, so half an exabyte.
Not even. No, you do suck at this game.
I do. I'm still not getting what an exabyte is.
Need to give you a lesson in maths.
Right.
10 times 10 is 100. 100 times 10 is 1,000.
Right.
1,000 times 10 is...
You've lost me.
10,000.
Okay.
No, Facebook actually, and this is an old-ish study, so it's probably more. They basically deal with 500 or more terabytes of data a day.
Wow.
Now, when you consider maybe...
And that's just like, look what I have for dinner.
Yeah.
I'm down the pub.
Yeah, it's complete nonsense.
That's fucked up. Right, okay, we're getting
Facebook, many
terabytes per day.
Twitter.
Of useless
Twitter
data.
Is 140 characters.
I reckon more.
Maybe some photos. It's not more.
Oh, okay.
But still, how many terabytes of data do you think
Twitter
has? All
right, let's say two-thirds of that. Let's say 300 terabytes.
It's eight.
Eight terabytes?
Yes. Yeah. Which, considering 140 characters and text is tiny.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. So what do you reckon the bytage of 140...
It's 140 KB, or 140 bytes.
Oh, it's a byte a character, is it?
Yeah.
Well, we probably had this conversation.
Yeah, we did.
Cool. You know how this is called We're Drunk and We Know Things?
We're drunk and we don't quite remember what we knew.
We're drunk and we know things at the time, but then afterwards... Right, okay. That's disturbing. So 140 bytes times... Sorry, into 8 terabytes.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. And imagine how much of that is just racist nonsense.
Or dick pics.
Or dick pics. Now, the average dick pic, what, 100 bytes? I mean,
the tweet about it is 100 bytes.
Me, it's 150 bytes. I don't want to brag.
I like to think that on a warm day, about 210.
On a cold day, 25 bytes. If I've been in the sea in Jersey, like 5 bytes.
How big do you think databases can get? Not a real number, but...
Well, it's got to be, like, the NSA's bloody database on... what's his face? Edward Schofield. That's his name. Schofield.
Phillips' brother.
His name.
Not Snowden.
Edward Snowden. Nailed it! Yes! Edit the other ones out. It's like, all that kind of stuff. Who you phoned, who you did this, what you did this, blah, blah, blah. That's got to be, like, bananas petabytes then, hasn't it? Hasn't it got to be
petabytes,
everything?
Exabytes.
But that's, like, that's not just text, that's... Video, pictures,
yep.
Everything.
Huge.
Yeah. Like, unimaginably big.
Yeah. So, yeah. We can kind of say, and there is a great story about, there is a shack in Cornwall.
Shaquille O'Neal?
No.
Shaq was in Cornwall?
Not the shack.
Oh, okay, right.
A shack in Cornwall, which GCHQ had built, and it sits directly over the fibre connection from the UK to Europe.
And they all got bubble cancer.
Would you believe it? The... UK Intelligence Service have bought a building that runs directly over the top of it.
That's weird. I'm
Every
sure they haven't got, like,
data.
A tap.
They might have a tap. They might have a whole bathtub. Who knows?
Indeed. Full of data. What's weird is they're in your data, in the bath, in your data.
And I think what's even weirder is that, leaving aside, like, spies and governments and what have you, although not leave them aside too much, because it is important, we are generating, as a population... about the same data that we were always generating, but we are digitising and sharing more of it. So next time you're using the internet, Mike, or indeed listening to this podcast, just stop and think about how many databases the data that you are accessing has run through. Our website is one, iTunes is another.
And how those databases that I'm on, is that data always tied directly to me, or do they just want to know the data that people in general are using?
Some of it is anonymized. Some of it is not linked back to you in any way, shape, or form.
Because some of it, like Facebook, don't give a shit if it's just about me. They want to know what people in general are doing.
Yes, but your friends need to know it to you.
But also, like you say, why would you build two databases when you could just build one that has all that data on it and you could just split it up?
So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this is the big privacy discussion that we keep coming around to in these segments.
Because I am really paranoid and you're making me worse. You cut out two rants in the last two bloody podcasts about it.
Because they don't air well.
I'm scared, Rob. I'm up to some shady shit. I mean, no, I'm not.
With your job and your house and your wife,
and...
you deviant bastard. Anyway, that's been D.
Bloody hell. We always finish the film one on a bad joke, and we always seem to be finishing the tech one on me going... bloody hell. Mind blown.
And that's it for this month's episode of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you don't, feel free to tap us up on Twitter or send us an email or just generally throw bricks through our windows.
And also, if you don't like it, just either stop listening or, you know, shut up and keep listening. Preferably the second one. We need the followers.
If you don't like it, share it. You know, share the pain. Tell your friends.
Or tweet us and correct us. That would be good. I'm happy to be corrected.
Next week, we're moving on to letter E. And for the first time ever, we put this open to a public vote. We had our shortlist. And the selection is...
Drum roll!
Escape from New York. Ready? Anyway, yeah. So we're going to be talking about a fairly terrible movie that has, granted, a lot of interesting connotations, side slips and walls.
I think I'm going to have to explain to you why it's good. I think it's what it's going to be.
You're going to have to. I mean, I love Carpenter, but Jesus Christ. Empire Strikes Back, people.
Kurt Russell's hair alone.